Thank you so much for speaking to the Global Observatory today, Mr. Ahern. You were recently involved in an initiative in the Basque Country, and we're very interested to get your thoughts and ideas on the prospects of peace there. After an international conference on Monday, October 17th, you read out a declaration calling for a definitive cessation of ETA's armed campaign for Basque independence. And the following Thursday, as we know, ETA announced a historic and definitive end to its armed activity. Some are skeptical of this declaration because ETA has broken ceasefires in the past. Do you believe that ETA is committed to renouncing violence this time?
Well, we certainly hope so. And I think it's stronger than hope. I mean, I have watched for many years the difficulties with ETA. There's been many Irish figures, including Father Reid, that have been involved over the years. And I've spoken to him many times and others. And in my visits to Spain as Taoiseach over all of the years, obviously the press conferences, and people would always ask about the Irish situation. And while I always emphasise that no peace initiative is the same, and that no location is the same, that no conflict is the same, there are always some messages, and I underline some messages that can come from others. And because of that, I have made a number of statements over the years about some suggestions in a low-key and helpful way, and what I thought might help or what might be considered. And I went to San Sebastian at the invitation of some of the leadership of the political movement back in the ruling party political movements back in April of this year. And I set out in a speech that was, I think, attended by everybody, including representatives of the Basque people, just a long insight into what happened in Ireland over a long period. And then over the months, there was a lot of tic-tacking with me and others. And as you know, a number of peace groups have been involved in the region. And that all led to the invitation to me and others to come back. I suppose to answer your question, I mean, I think from all that we heard, I know there's been three or four attempts made over the years. I think this is the fourth. They haven't worked, but there seems to be, and you can only say seem, there seems to be an appetite to make this declaration that we made and to make it successful, which is what we all hope. And I suppose the first one is the key one, that we call an ETA to make a public declaration of a definitive cessation of all armed action and to request talks with the government of Spain and France to address exclusively the consequences of conflict. And I think we've got, as you've said, that response a few days later, and that then leads into all of the other issues. So I think there is in all recent peace processes, as I know from the Irish one, that was in 94, things went right. In 96, they went wrong. And then you have an up and down period for some years, then the Good Friday Agreement, and then the negotiating period. But, you know, it can't all be okay on a Monday and all wrong on Tuesday and all right on a Wednesday. I think it needs a period of stability to try to get this to bed down and to sustain itself. But I am confident that the initial work has been successful and that there's good grounds and foundation to build on.
In the declaration that you made, you spoke of a genuine opportunity for peace right now. Why, in your view, are the conditions ripe for ETA to permanently renounce violence at this time?
Well, I think from the conference or from the meeting that I did in San Sebastian early in the year, and the people that I talked to, you know, back in Dublin before that, and the contacts since then, and you know, others like Jonathan Powell, who I dealt with in Northern Ireland, who's been involved, and the people working with him and some of the other groups. I mean, they do believe that, you know, there is this, you know, this feeling that, and more than a feeling, obviously knowledge, and from all of our collective experiences, that there was a genuine opportunity for peace arises, and when that arises, it has to be seized. And I suppose that emanates from the growing demand of people in the country, and from the population, and from the political representatives to try to find a resolution to the conflict, and that to be done, as always, through democracy, through dialogue, and complete non-violence. And I think that has created this opportunity.
You also said that peace comes when the power of reconciliation outweighs the habits of hate. What kind of steps can be taken now to promote reconciliation, and what issues still need to be addressed to build confidence in this peace process?
Well, I think obviously when the first step was achieved and you know, from the ETA statement, now you need to get into the governments of Spain and France to, you know, to get into the talks and to deal with all of the consequences of conflict. And the consequences of conflict are always many. And I think, you know, they're best known by the governments. But, you know, from the Northern Ireland experiences, all of the issues that we had to deal with that were difficult, all of the issues of the parity of esteem, of decommissioning of arms, of the policing, and, you know, the prisoners' issues. And they were the Northern Ireland ones. There's obviously different ones that have to be, you know, talked about by the parties here. And I think the urgent steps to promote reconciliation have to be, as I said in one of the indents in the declaration, was to try to assist the victims and recognise all of the terrible things that have happened and been done, and to try and heal the social and the personal wounds of that period. None of these things are easy, and, you know, we're very conscious saying them in the declaration, but I think they've been well documented in the Basque region. And I don't say it's easy for people to have to deal with these, but I do think if there's sincerity and a willingness, that can be achieved.
ETA has not yet agreed or declared that it will disarm and disband. Will you or other negotiators call on them to do so?
Well, I think it's a matter now for the negotiations to move on and to see where it goes. I mean, you know, I know that all of the sensitivities are around these issues, and people always like to get to the end line before you get to some of the other lines. And this is always the difficulty. And as you know, I had to deal with these right through from 1998, the Good Friday Agreement, right through to 2007, and through the St. Andrews Agreement in the north. If I had started at the point of 1998, saying before we go any further, that we have the absolute abolition of what was the provisional IRA, I wouldn't have got too much further. What you have to do is move to a position where you can remove the difficulties that make organisations to be there in the first place. And I think that's where dialogue and moving to democracy and moving to peaceful means can go. But it's one step as you go in successful peace process. If you try and take them all together, it won't happen.
I wonder, what advantages do you think informal peace negotiations involving international actors bring to efforts to resolve conflict generally, based on your experience in Northern Ireland and now in the Basque Country and elsewhere?
Well, I suppose the best one for them is the authority on is Northern Ireland. But if you look what happened, Bill Clinton took an interest and he gave us George Mitchell. George Mitchell set the Mitchell Principles, which have now become, I think, not only relevant to Ireland, but, you know, something that's relevant internationally as well. Then we had people like John de Chastelain and Harry Halkery, and a number of other international figures that either formed the international decommissioning group, or helped us through various other ways. So we had a range of international figures that helped us. And they all brought, I think, their own. We had the oversight commissioners, and, you know, Brian Curran was involved. He was involved in the Basque. But we had a number of people of international repute that helped in different ways. And, I mean, John de Chastelain was hugely helpful in dealing with the thorny issue of decommissioning and bringing that to a successful conclusion. George Mitchell's role throughout, and particularly to the negotiations and to getting people around the table in the multi-party talks in 1997-98. This is hugely important. So I don't think I can emphasise that, you know, I think international figures or international people, and in this case myself and Tony Blair and others, you know, you feel almost an obligation to, you know, to play a role and to help if you can, because other people helped us when we need it. And as you remember, when we were dealing with the you know, where the IRA war factories, were they silent and were they out of the equation? We then got Cyril Ramaphosa from South Africa and President Atatari to actually go and physically look at these armed dumps. And that was accepted, and it was accepted by the parties in the north, it was accepted internationally. It wouldn't have worked just getting domestic people doing that. But I think the role of international people is absolutely massive. I think I might have forgotten a few of the names of the people as well, the other names that were involved in Northern Ireland. I don't do that out of any disrespect for them. I think they were all hugely important.
Do you envision a similar process over the long term in the Basque Country with regard to disarmament and international facilitators overseeing the disarmament process?
Well, I think in the end of our statement, we did say that, you know, if there's a role, I mean, not just ourselves, but in other people to help and to assist and go through the various components as they arrive. I've no doubt that, you know, there will be issues that will arise that perhaps we didn't that we didn't touch on, but they have been looked at by others, and I know Jonathan Powell has mentioned a number of those to me in the way, but I think they will require assistance along the way. But hopefully, we try to help at one stage of it. There'll be other stages as we helped in good faith. We were trying to offer ideas from our experiences, our perspectives in being involved in resolving conflicts that affected our own societies and peoples. And I've no doubt that as they work their way through, they will see other difficulties, and hopefully people will assist.
Based on your experience in the Northern Ireland peace process, what key message do you like to tell people in the Basque Country and in Spain when you're talking to them about prospects for peace there?
Well, I suppose I outlined back in April to them, and that night I think all the key players were there, from elected representatives of the various parties and also representatives of those that had been engaged in the conflict. I set out our experiences in the north and all that was involved in that, and I went through in huge detail the ups and downs and the in-betweens of so many of these difficulties. And I think for the people who are taking this forward and those that are involved will find many obstacles, but obstacles are there to be overcome. And I think with a sense of goodwill, a sense of parity of esteem, a sense of people working to find resolutions and being tolerant and being forgiving for all that has happened, as we had to do in Northern Ireland, of all the terrible things and atrocities that happened, you can find resolutions and move forward to make it a better place, not only for this generation but for the next generation.
Thank you very much for talking to us today, Mr. Ahern.
Thanks very much, Maria.